there. Welcome back to another episode of the Knowledge Podcast by Wahoo. I'm Dr. Ginger Gottschall.
And I'm Matt Kasson. This is part two of our series on legal, scientifically backed performance-enhancing supplements.
And before we get started, we just need a little honesty check. Here's the situation. In terms of improving your endurance performance, improving your power production as an athlete, and specifically a cyclist, what we're talking about today is only a minor contributor to your success. Genetics, physical conditioning, your training, a periodized program, your mental, emotional health, recovery strategies, and nutrition are all the things that make a big difference. So what we're talking about today are improvements in the range of 1% to 5%. So we just want to make sure we're all clear on what these can do for you. And before you try either of these supplements, please connect with your medical professional and just have a discussion about your current health condition and other prescription medications that you're taking and how there could be any influence and kind of effects from these supplements. Thank you. Interactions is exactly it.
This is also a good time to point out the first two supplements we talked about, which are essentially beetroot juice for simpler terms and baking soda. Those are food stuffs that are federally regulated. So you know what you're getting when you are consuming those things.
And purchasing them at your local grocer.
Exactly. Now, the two supplements we're talking about today are creatine and beta-alanine, which, yes, you can consume via food, which we'll get to later. But when it comes to taking the actual supplement, it becomes a dietary supplement. The supplement industry has essentially zero regulations. For something to get pulled as a supplement, it basically needs to be proven that it's dangerous. You can say whatever you want about what your supplement does and put a bunch of rice flour in a gelatin capsule and 0.001% of your proprietary blend, sell it for $60 a bottle. There you go. You've got money. But what it says on the label isn't always there. And you hear a lot about athletes testing positive.
Correct.
For contaminated substance. Because a lot of these different supplements, it's made in a factory just like anything else, and they run through different products. And so if there's going to be residue, because they don't necessarily take a lot of care to clean those things. Mm-hmm. So what I'm getting at here is these two supplements, if you want to take them, you have to buy them in some sort of powder or pill form. There are entities out there that will actually test and verify the quality and essentially the lack of contaminants for supplements. One of them is like NSF certified safe for sports. Now to do that, the companies making these supplements have to take a lot more time and effort to make sure everything's clean, make sure everything is what it says it is. Because of that, it's a lot more expensive to buy that stuff. But even if you're not competing and thinking, oh, it's okay if I get a little bit of this or that, that's illegal. Really what you're saying is it's okay if I don't know what I'm putting in my body. And that's really not.
It's actually not okay.
Exactly. So when I would take these things, I paid probably three times what you can find on average for these things, just to make sure they're high quality, they're certified, nothing's going to go south. So if that becomes a deal breaker, that extra cost, then these are definitely not the 1% gains you're looking for. You can just add 5 minutes to your nap next time.
Very, very smart advice from someone who has raced at the professional level. And even if you're not quite at that level, but care about your result and actually having that result be verified and not disqualify you, it's worth it. Just another little warning from us here before we get into the two supplements of the day.
Get into the fun stuff.
Yes. And the first one is creatine. This is a substance that is actually naturally found in your muscle cells. So it's an organic compound, and it's derived from three amino acids stored in the muscle as creatine phosphate. The phosphate is an important component because it's essential when you regenerate your big energy producer, your battery, the ATP or adenosine triphosphate.
Yeah. And so about 95% of your body's creatine is stored in the muscles, like in your muscles themselves. And most of that is actually stored in your type 2 fibers. And then that storage format is, as Ginger said, phosphocreatine. Now, ATP is what drives all of our muscle actions. And there's basically an instantaneous way to have that, of just having ATP, bam, there, ready to go. You can produce it using oxidative phosphorylation, but it takes some time. That's using carbohydrates, fat, maybe some oxygen, depending on the intensity. It takes a while for that ATP to get produced so your muscles can use it. So when you have greater stores of phosphate creatine, you have greater stores of instantaneous energy, which is why it helps your muscles produce energy during high intensity exercise, specifically in bursts lasting less than 10 seconds. That immediate quick sprint or start of a hard effort, you're getting your ATP from these stores.
Exactly. So just think about immediate versus delayed. Now, we are going to be talking about how you can get some of those immediate stores at the end of a sprint. And what happens is they can actually get regenerated, essentially, so that you can use them after being active for a certain period of time at a lower intensity. So
the phosphocreatine, again, it's a component of the ATP. If you have more of it in your muscles, there's more of it floating around for your body to reuse.
Exactly. Now, this brings us to talking about the dose, and it also brings us into where you get this naturally in terms of your nutritional components. And it comes from red meat, pork, poultry, and fish. Those are four of the highest foods in terms of having creatine naturally.
Which makes sense because that's where the body stores it, is in the muscles.
Exactly. Now, if you are a vegan or a vegetarian, then you likely have lower stores of this. And this is actually my personal, which is interesting about me. One, I'm a vegetarian. And two, I have never had any type 2 fibers ever. Now, that's an exaggeration, but very low. So maybe I don't notice it as much because I am not a sprinter. I don't produce very much power, but I likely have less of this naturally. So for me, as a vegetarian, I might see more benefit. Now, most supplements are going to come in a creatine monohydrate powder. And another thing we want to mention is that often if you take this in combination with a carbohydrate source, you may actually have an improved uptake with respect to storage and future use.
Which I think makes a lot of sense because if you're consuming that with carbohydrates, your body wants to absorb those carbohydrates into the muscles. So the gates are sort of open. So some creatine can just sneak in there at the same time.
I'm going to call it a win-win.
So a loading phase is what you would initially start with, and that's 20 grams a day, usually divided into four doses. So basically 5 grams four times a day. And that loading phase to start off is for 5 to 7 days. So basically a week of a lot. Well, that'll ensure that you've kind of topped off those stores that your muscles can handle. They can only fit so much in there. Going beyond that isn't going to help. But once you do have those muscles topped off, you go into a maintenance phase, which would be 3 to 5 grams just once a day. And that's the duration of your supplementation period. Now, with most things, things we're talking about, they don't need to be done every single day. And there's actually much smarter ways to go about planning where these would fit into your training. We've already mentioned this helps with sprinting. And you might say, well, my event doesn't involve sprinting, so I won't take it. Well, you don't have to take it for your event, but you can take it while you're training and train harder.
Absolutely. And this gets into some of the performance benefits. And in fact, there are chronic adaptations to taking creatine regularly, which is increasing your lean muscle mass, which is helpful for any athlete, as well as once you do talk about those folks that are doing sprinting that involves greater muscle mass and power production, we can see improvements in that also. Even if you are an endurance athlete, I am guessing there are times during your training and or racing where you're putting a little extra effort in, whether that's just the finish or if it's catching someone or if it's initially when you're transitioning as a multi-sport athlete, but there are times when there are needs for these immediate bursts of higher energy. With chronic training and use of creatine, we also do see that you have improvements in oxygen consumption at a submaximal exercise or training intensity.
So by improvement, we mean a reduction.
Correct.
You're using less oxygen at a given...
For a specific intensity, yes. And what we're going to get into a little bit more is a very specific amount of time when we're talking about the sprint at the end of a race. So let's talk about a time trial that lasts less than 50 minutes. If your time trial or event is less than 50 minutes, then creatine supplementation can help you at the end of that race. However, in longer events, over 50 minutes, whether that be endurance or let's just say a time trial that lasts 75 to 90 minutes, you may not see as much of improvement in that last sprint effort. But if you do have some carbohydrate supplementation with it, then a lot of times that uptake, like Mac talked about, can be beneficial.
If you're going for shorter stuff, it definitely helps. If you're going for longer stuff, it can help.
It can help. It just isn't as definitive in terms of the results, and it may be more individual, and it could also depend just on what those stores are at the time.
When we're talking about short-term supplementation and what you can see there, so Ginger was just mentioning the chronic adaptations. Cyclists have been reported to see an increase of maximal power of 5 to 15%. Work performed during sets of maximal effort is increased, so it's either going harder for the same number of sets or going just as hard for more sets. Single effort sprint performance increased by 1 to 5%, and then the work performed during repetitive sprint increases. So again, doing more power for more reps is, generally speaking, in my experience as a coach, a beneficial training tool.
Absolutely. And we're talking about 5 to 10% on average here, upwards of 15, but that's kind of in the extreme case. One pro of creatine supplementation in terms of the research, and this research is pretty extensive in terms of the amount of time. People really started utilizing it 15 to 20 years ago, so we do have a significant amount of data to back that there doesn't seem to be any long-term detriments in terms of health consequences if you use it at the recommended dose, and the time that's been studied is about up to 4 years here, so pretty significant amount of time.
So as long as you stay with normal doses and have high quality, untainted.
Yes, uncontaminated powder, then you should be good. There is a consequence of this oftentimes, which is a bit of weight gain or a 1 to 2 kilogram increase in body mass, which is a lot of times a water retention. And if you're thinking about pounds, this could be anywhere from 1 to 6. So think about that with respect to if you have a little terms of flexibility in that area, that won't be a detriment in terms of your performance.
And it's also worth noting that, again, that water weight can essentially shift. So you can do a supplement regime during training,
right,
and then gain the benefits of being able to train harder in specific sessions and then stop taking or highly reduce, and you will essentially reverse some of that water gain. There are some reports propose that creatine supplementation can be anti-inflammatory, and it reduces exercise-induced oxidative stress, which is generally a good thing. Creatine supplements can also increase the phosphocreatine stores in your brain, which may promote brain health and improve symptoms of neurological diseases.
Which is a fairly new finding, but really encouraging with respect to looking at the future data and aging and taking it away from performance, but just overall neuro health.
Yeah, a lot of these supplements can get a lot of attention initially because of their performance attributes, and then it turns out that there's all sorts of other benefits that we didn't even know about.
Exactly. So again, talking win-win here. So that's our first supplement we're going to chat about today. And the second one is beta-alanine. And this is a non-essential amino acid that is actually another naturally produced by the body.
Right. So it's produced in the body. It's broken down in the body. It can be consumed from outside. So what beta-alanine does once you consume it, it is the rate-limiting component of another bit in your muscles called carnosin. Now, so beta-alanine combines with histidine to form carnosin, and it's a dipeptide that helps delay the onset of pH decline and muscle fatigue with the beneficial effects of building endurance and improving recovery. What does that mean? It means it acts as a buffer internally within the cell. Last episode, we talked about sodium bicarbonate and how that helps buffer the blood. That's the fluid outside of your cell. Carnosin functions by buffering inside the muscle cell itself. Now, you might be saying, okay, well, it sounds like carnosin's what I want here in my muscles, so why don't I just take carnosin? Well, if you supplement carnosin, your body breaks it down to histidine and beta-alanine, and then later on has to be put back together into carnosin in your muscles. So it's funky that beta-alanine, you're trying to take it so your body can make something else out of it that is not effective to take on its own.
A little bit tricky, but the bottom line there is that you cannot take the carnosine independently.
And when we talk about these performance improvements, the mechanism is all that increased in carnosine in the muscles.
Exactly.
But that's when we talk about here are the benefits of beta-alanine. We're kind of talking about here are the benefits of higher concentrations of carnosine in your muscles.
Yes. Now let's chat about, again, where can we get this from our actual what we eat and consume? And again,
so if it's stored in the muscles, just like creatine, I have a guess on where it's...
Mac, he's so quick. He beat me to the punch. We're going to be talking again about primarily meats. And this is going to include red meats as well as poultry and fish. So if you are an individual pescatarian, let's say, you can also get it from other meats than red. But again, vegetarians and vegans are going to have about 50% less carnosine in their muscles compared to an individual who does eat meat. So this is, again, a supplement that if you are a plant-based protein consumer, you may want to think about this supplementation or try it out a bit. In terms of daily consumption, it's about 65 milligrams per kilogram of body mass. And the protocol is a split dose that you would take 0.8 to 1.6 grams every 3 to 4 hours. And that could be over a period of time lasting anywhere from about 10 to 12 weeks. So this does require a little bit of planning in terms of making sure your stores are built up before you're looking for that benefit.
Yeah, and you might say, well, I'll just do a really big dose just once a day or twice a day. Well, doesn't quite work as effectively as that. There's, again, a rate limiter to how much of this you can process and move into your muscles. So one big dose at a time isn't going to cut it.
It isn't. And also, you just want to think about how you're dividing that, making sure you're well hydrated. It's also good to happen after a meal.
So when we talk about the performance impacts that beta-alanine supplementation can bring, what that means is for short duration sprints like 10 seconds or less, and longer duration high-intensity efforts like sessions over 10 minutes, there isn't as much evidence that there is any improvement with beta-alanine supplementation despite those increases in carnosine content.
So a little bit of a bummer, but we're talking a small range here, and it's definitely worth it if you are in that short duration performance gain.
And it's worth noting that that's pretty much the duration you would want to use for maximal aerobic power intervals.
Oh, hello.
So maybe your event doesn't require you to go all out for 10 minutes. Maybe it's 2 hours, but I would guess your training involves some VO2 max intervals. And if this helps you do more power during VO2 max intervals, that's going to help.
It will help improve your maximal as well as average power output in the longer duration. Definitely worth thinking about in the training component. In terms of average peak power increases, there was a recent study that found that endurance cyclists can benefit up to about 11.4% in terms of their average peak power. So that's, again, Mac is using a great example of you use it in training during those shorter intervals, you're going to see a benefit in an endurance event. Another study found that 28 days of supplementation increased cycling performance via an increased time to exhaustion, as well as an associated improvement in lactate clearance. And this was during passive rest. So again, we're seeing some benefits for you folks out there that do longer events, and it's just a matter of how you utilize it in training.
With both of these supplements, both beta-alanine and creatine, you'll notice that a lot of these protocols are looking at multi-day supplementation periods. Mm-hmm. And it's because there's not a lot of evidence showing that a one-off single supplementation of either of these has these levels of impacts. It requires regular supplementation over a decent amount of time to get those changes in the muscle stores of the phosphocreatine and carnosine. Now, I mentioned taking a big dose instead of lots of small ones. Well, a fun dose-dependent side effect of beta-alanine is paresthesia, which is that pins and needle tingling sensation. Higher the dose, the more likely that is to happen. I learned very quickly that I needed to take very small doses because even in a moderate one of around 2 grams, which for my size works out to what would be recommended, I get really awful whole body tingling. I had some teammates who really enjoyed that sensation, so they were fine. They were still doing the 2 grams and fine with it, but that was not
enjoyable
my cup of tea.
For you.
No. So I definitely took the route of smaller and more frequent dosing.
All right. And when we say smaller and more frequent, we are also talking about for a long period of time that you are maintaining this regimen. And for individuals that do maintain that routine, they did see an increase in lean muscle mass. And it also acted as similar to what we talked about with creatine. It neutralizes the free radicals, reduces oxidative stress. So there are some pros with respect to recovery also, which is pretty cool.
And then this is not a scientifically validated. This is an anecdote for me. But
okay.
Again, with the supplementation, I found I always needed to take it with food. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I could get kind of nauseous.
Right.
Which took me a really long time to figure out when I would do fasted rides and take my morning beta-alanine before going and riding and then wondering why I felt so awful. And it was because of the beta-alanine. So,
yes. You know. And that's another situation where we talked about not only is it going to be better to take it with food for the nausea feeling, but also for that absorption. So super cool.
All right. So I hope that a lot of you came in here thinking that you're not going to take creatine or beta-alanine because that's for sprinters and bodybuilders, and that's not what you are. I hope that's changed.
Yes. We did maybe a little bit of myth busting.
And so that is it for this second part of our Ergogenic Aids Legal Performance Enhancing Supplements episode. Thanks for listening to the Knowledge Podcast by Wattage.